This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in New York. And Taylor, that American League wildcard race getting a little nutty.
Certainly tightening up, Buster. Yankees not doing themselves any favors over the weekend. All these AL East teams, they got a handle on the O's, but the Yanks, man, struggling a little bit. And then they get blasted by the Blue Jays.
Well, and I think the second best team in the American League as of this morning might not even make the playoffs. We're going to be talking about that coming up. But we got to start with that crazy game in Boston yesterday, the Tampa Bay Rays against the Red Sox. Early on, it looked like the Red Sox were going to be in control.
The 0-1, swing a line, drive down the left field line, should be extra bases, hits on the track, rolls into the corner, one run is scored. Here comes J.D., Raffy held at third, it's an RBI double, a two-run double for Dahlbeck, and the Red Sox lead it 6-1.
Joe Castiglione, WEEI 93.7 FM, the Red Sox would extend their lead to 7-1, but you know what? The Rays came back.
And the pitch, swing and a fly ball to center field, but well, it's going to push back Verdugo. He's on the warning track and drops the ball. And it's going to clear the bases. Wall scores. Arozarena scores. Franco scores. Throw to third is wild. Goes into the dugout. And Cruz will come around and score. Four across home plate. And the Rays are indeed right back in it. It's 7-5.
Lady Wills, WDAE, with that call right there. Yeah. Kyle Schwarber's been really good offensively, but there's no doubt that when you work to get him in the lineup, it means there's going to be defensive compromises in other parts. And we showed that yesterday. For Alex Verdugo, playing center field, the adventures were not over.
Here it comes to Meadows, swinging a high drive straightaway center, moving back Verdugo, back to the track, to the wall, off the top of the wall, and Karen's back towards the infield. Meadows around second. He's going to try for third. Linares is waving him. He's on his way to the plate. And it's an inside-the-park home run for Austin Meadows, and we're all tied up.
And you could hear the Boston fans booing at the end of that clip right there from WDAE. The two sides went into extra innings. This happened.
The pitch. Swing and a line drive underneath the glove of the first baseman, Cordero, and down the right field line. Here comes Arozarena. Here's the throw from Renfro. It's late. Cruz flying in the second. He is safe. Rays take the lead. It's 10-9.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz would make a head-first slide into second base at the end of that play, and then later he'd have another head-first slide. So two head-first slides for a 41-year-old in the 10th inning. Tampa Bay holds on. They win 11-10 in Yankee Stadium. The Blue Jays and the Yankees, and the Jays grab control this game early.
I got to think there's sometimes, Dan, where you know, a pitch like that, Jameson Taillon, he gets the call and it keeps Vladimir still at the plate. And he's thinking, man, I wish I would have just ball four because now I run the risk of this guy hitting a solo shot because he's that capable, a top three MVP candidate in the league this year.
Just 22 years of age, really coming into his own this season. He lifts the 3-2 to deep right. Did he get enough? And just as you said, Singy, Guerrero hits it out. So Simeon and Guerrero going back to back in the top of the first inning, 2-0 Blue Jays.
Chris Singleton, Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio, and Marcus Simeon was not done on the day.
And now first pitch swinging, gets a ball in the air down the left field line toward the corner. It's gone. First pitch swinging, Simeon with a grand slam to blow it open for the Blue Jays.
And the final score there, 8-0 at the end of the day, the Yankees leading Toronto by 3.5 games, Boston 3 games ahead of the Blue Jays, but I don't know if that's going to be enough. Big news from the division over the weekend, the Yankees play setup man Jonathan Loaisiga on the 10-day injured list with a strained rotator cuff. It seems like a long shot that he would pitch again during the regular season in 2021. First pitch is part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Cleveland Indians manager Terry Francona is going to undergo toe surgery today. Francona, 62, stepped down for the season on July 29th, and he had hip replacement surgery. He's going through this and these procedures before he and the Cleveland front office decide whether or not he's going to come back in 2022. The Atlanta Braves locked up Charlie Morton to a one-year extension yesterday for $20 million. Charlie Morton's been excellent for the Braves this year, 13-5 with a 3.47 ERA. In the National League races on Monday, the Mets were in a position to beat the Nationals. They held a 3-2 lead, but Edwin Diaz melted down in the bottom of the ninth.
Runner from first, Stevenson goes, swinging a ground ball toward the middle, and it'll skitter off the glove of Lindor out into center field. Bell scores, and a Curly W's in the books. Carter Kieboom with a ground ball off Lindor's glove into center field for a game-winning hit.
The Giants are on a roll. They took the series in the Dodgers over the weekend to hold first place in the National League West. And then going into Monday, the start of a series in Colorado, they jumped on the Rockies.
He's ready. He throws. Estrada hits another high drive down the left field line. This one is on its way, and it is gone. Tyro Estrada, second straight at bat with a home run, this time a two-run shot, and it's 6-1 Giants.
Dave Fleming, KNBR, Giants win that game 10-5. The Dodgers, Cardinals, Max Scherzer pitching his home state of Missouri against St. Louis, and Chris Taylor gave him a lead the top of the first.
One ball, no strike pitch to Taylor. He swings and he lifts it in the air deep to left center field. It is back. It is gone. That's a home run into the bullpen. Chris Taylor, a two-run shot. And the Dodgers lead it 4-0.
Tim Nebert, AM 570 LA Sports. Scherzer was great.
Payoff pitch is right there. Called strike three, strikeout number 10. And Scherzer has 2,991 in his career.
On Sunday morning, it looked like Walker Buehler was the front runner to win the National League Cy Young Award. Now, Max Scherzer? I'm going to ask Tim Kirchin that. What do you got, Taylor?
All right, Buster, two things to note, both Mike Greenberg-centric. First, you've got Better Days on ESPN+. If there's a game someone's betting on, it's stream season two of Better Days, the Mike Greenberg-hosted series that brings the true stories of unforgettable gambling adventures to life. All episodes are streaming now only on ESPN+. Plus, and you can also watch Mike Greenberg's radio show on ESPN Plus. That is Greeny. Mike Greenberg brings his depth of sports knowledge, fun, and entertainment to Greeny, his ESPN radio show that runs Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time, from the latest in college football. To get you all ready for the NFL, which starts on Thursday, you can listen to Greeny as a podcast as well, wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirectTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirchin.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirchin covers baseball for ESPN, which yesterday, Tim, meant broadcasting one of the nuttiest games that you will ever call in your career. The Red Sox blowing a 7-1 lead. So much that happened in that game against the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, that was one of the best, one of the worst, one of the stupidest games I've ever covered in my life. But it's what makes baseball so great is there were so many elements that you could break down, some of them really bad. But it was a blast to do it. It lasted 5.5 hours, and yet there was something to talk about literally every 2 minutes of that game. There were hits everywhere, pitching changes, strategic moves, some of the worst plays I've ever seen in my life. But that's what makes baseball so great. Every day, I've said it a million times, you go to the ballpark, you might see something you've never seen before. I saw about 5 things yesterday that just made me slap my forehead. Like, how can that happen in a major league game? And yet it all happened yesterday on Labor Day, quite appropriately on Labor Day for Red Sox fans, because that was a torturous loss.
We've been watching these teams for 5.5 months, and yet we're now in this moment and you're reacting to what's going on. I have some strong opinions coming off of baseball, a play yesterday about the American League teams. But you mentioned about things that you've never seen before. Before we get to my list of my impressions of where we stand today, how in the world do you have a situation where you got a center fielder being backed up by a shortstop?
Okay, Buster, you know I'm easy on the players. If you're 0 for 20, if you can't throw a strike, if you make an error, I get it. But there was absolutely no excuse for a ball being hit off the center field fence, which should have been a double, and ends up on a game-tying inside the park home run in the ninth inning. The left fielder, J.D. Martinez, did not move 1 inch on that ball. The right fielder, Hunter Renfroe, did not move 1 inch on that ball. They have no responsibility on that play whatsoever, except to help the center fielder in any way. They didn't even move. The shortstop ran out to pick the ball up when it caromed off the center field fence. To have a game tied in the ninth inning like that was disgraceful. This can't happen on the big league level. Buck Showalter used to teach me to watch away from the ball when you're watching a major league game. Look at everyone and see what they're doing on every play. And again, there's no responsibility whatsoever for the right fielder, center field, left fielder there, except to back up the center fielder, and they didn't do it. And it essentially cost the Red Sox a game yesterday. So this is the only part of the game that upsets me, is when people aren't thinking their way through. The players are bigger, stronger, faster, and better than ever, and they have less of an idea how to play the game. And yesterday in the ninth inning was the perfect example.
And I got to say, like, that was an incredibly embarrassing play for the Red Sox, and yet it could have been even more embarrassing if Jose Iglesias hadn't hustled in the way that he did, right?
Right. I'm going to give him credit for going out there, but the fact that that ball rolled as far as it did and no one even moved on that play. And, you know, the Alex Cora of the world, who is the most disciplined, traditional, fundamental manager you'll ever meet. I didn't even have I couldn't even call him after the game to say what happened there, because I know what happened there. But for that to happen in a big league game, Alex must have been embarrassed to be a part of that. That's how bad it was.
All right. At the end of the day, this is some of my strong opinions. Number one, the Toronto Blue Jays are sitting in sixth place in the American League. They're 3.5 games behind the Yankees. They're 3 games behind the Red Sox. And Tim, not only do I think they have a real shot to make the playoffs, to me, besides the Tampa Bay Rays, they may be the best team in the American League right now. You co-signing or no?
Not completely, but they've won 5 in a row. They've won 8 out of 9. I think they're the most dangerous offensive team in the American League, which is really saying something when you have a league with the White Sox and the Astros. But when that team is swinging it, and man, are they swinging it right now. And when George Springer is healthy, which he might not be again, you put that team together and there is absolutely, they are a relentless offensive team in different ways. They don't just hit it out of the ballpark. They're so athletic. Marcus Semien is having a monster season. He's moving up the MVP ranks every day, as is, of course, Vlad Guerrero Jr. It's a really good team. I just refuse to count out the Red Sox and the Yankees, because every time they lose a terrible game like yesterday, somehow both of those teams rebound. But I wouldn't want any part of the Blue Jays down the stretch. And if they make it to the playoffs, I don't want any part of them in October.
Two, and we touched on this a little bit around the edges, I am shocked at how bad the Red Sox are defensively. But maybe we shouldn't be shocked because, look, their choice at the trade deadline was to, you know, add Kyle Schwarber to add offense. But it creates this island of misfit toy situation with their lineup.
Yeah, they had 93 errors going into yesterday's game, Buster. Only the Twins had more in the American League. And then the Red Sox made four more errors, and there were a couple, not to mention the mental mistakes they made that could have been added on there. Now, getting Jose Iglesias is going to help them at second base because that guy's a magician. He can play anywhere on the field and be better than the guy he replaced. And Kike Hernandez is going to go to center field until the whole cavalry returns. So their defense should get better, but it has not been a good defensive team. Bobby Dalbec is a pretty good defensive third baseman, not very good at first. So they have all sorts of defensive issues. And we've said this a million times, Buster, bad defensive teams or subpar defensive teams rarely win. It's the one thing that shows up every day. And you give more than 27 outs, and the Red Sox gave them about 33 outs yesterday. You're not going to win too many more games.
You and I know Alex Cora well from working with him at ESPN. How do you think he's feeling about this group defensively right now?
Well, he's not feeling good, but again, I talked to him yesterday, and Iglesias and Hernandez give them a better chance to upgrade that defense, but they still have problems at certain places. And again, Alex Cora was a defensive replacement, if nothing else, during his career, and a damn good second baseman, shortstop defensively. And to see mistakes happening when you built your whole career on your defense, I think that really, really hurts him. But, you know, they can still pound their way through certain things. I mean, they got almost, you know, they got 15 more hits or whatever yesterday, and they're going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and they're starting pitching. Rodriguez, Eovaldi, and Sale have been pretty good, but their defense has to improve if they're not only going to make the playoffs, but actually be effective in October.
My third point, I really feel like that the most underreported story in the last 72 hours, and by underreported, I mean in terms of its level of importance, is the Yankees' loss of Jonathan Loaisiga. I was thinking about their roster, talking about it with Matt Fiskerge and Alex Rodriguez before a game on Sunday Night Baseball. If you were to line up the three most important people in the Yankees roster, and I think you'll agree with me on this, number one would be Gerrit Cole. Number two would be Aaron Judge. And number three to me before this injury was Loaisiga. What do you think?
Well, he's been really good this year. He throws in the upper 90s. He can pitch two innings. He can pitch four innings. He can pitch the ninth inning. And those deep, versatile bullpens are how you win. And when you have a guy that can fill three different roles in the bullpen, those guys are worth their weight in gold. And especially in the way we play the game today. So it's a really big loss for the Yankees, and they need to get that bullpen straightened out if they're going to make the playoffs. I just can't wait to see where we go from here, because Oakland, Seattle, Toronto are right there on the Red Sox and Yankees, and I have no idea at this point what's going to happen. It's so good.
Our friend Aaron Boone, he needs heroes to emerge, because Loaisiga goes down at a time when, of course, Zach Britton is out, and they have no idea day-to-day what they're going to get out of Aroldis Chapman. It's going to feel like an absolute mystery some days once the Yankees get past the sixth inning. All right, let's talk about the San Francisco Giants, a team I saw over the weekend in their series against the Dodgers. That to me, what happened on Sunday, Tim, was like the embodiment of what the Giants have been this year. They had to start openers because of injuries on Saturday and Sunday. And on Sunday, they were facing the guy who we thought of as the front runner for the National League Cy Young Award in Walker Buehler. And you know what? They found a way. Like, they took that series, even though when we look at their lineup on a day-to-day basis and they don't have the firepower that the Dodgers do, remarkably, they continue to lead the National League West.
Yeah, they're an amazing team. I am so much a believer in what the Giants are doing. Walker Buehler wasn't just red hot against everyone. He never loses a game and pitches exceptionally well at that ballpark. And they knocked him around early. Brandon Belt hit a homer in the first inning. And again, this is the beauty of the Giants. They didn't have anyone get to 20 homers as a member of the Giants. So Chris Bryant hit 20 homers with the Cubs and all that stuff until Mike Yastrzemski hit number 20. So they were the second team in baseball to get a 120 homer guy. The Tigers were the last ones to do it. And yet they were leading the major leagues in homers and didn't have a 20 homer guy. That the point is, 1 through 8 or 9 in their lineup, they hit the ball out of the ballpark, and they just keep plugging guys in. Estrada, you know, all these guys that they just put in there, they all hit home runs. Lamont Wade Jr., it's amazing how they mix and match there. And not only do they get big hits, they hit the ball out of the ballpark. And that's how you win, Buster. That team swings at strikes and they throw strikes. And it's the simplest formula in the world. The Dodgers do it exceptionally well, but so do the Giants. And that's why they are where they are right now.
Yeah. The Tampa Bay Rays West in terms of depth, their lineup, you know, Phillies manager Joe Girardi said earlier this season that no matter what sort of a matchup you, you present for the Giants, they always have an answer with the way their roster is. Is Max Scherzer now the front runner for the National League Cy Young Award?
He is 13-4. He's got a 2.28 ERA. They've won all 7 starts of his since he's joined the Dodgers. And yes, he might be the front runner. There's about a 6-man race for that Cy Young in the National League. It is fascinating because Buehler's there and Corbin Burns is there and other guys are there. But Max Scherzer is right there again. Imagine winning a Cy Young pitching for 2 teams in a season. Of course, Rick Sutcliffe did that in 84. But he's been great. And we all know how competitive he is, how much he wants to win. And he is just, he didn't need to be rejuvenated because he's just snorting and snarling on that mound no matter what. But since he got to LA, he has been brilliant. 13 more strikeouts last night. So he might be the leader, but the leader is going to change literally week to week for these final 6 weeks before we get to a final 5 weeks before we get to a winner.
So later today, Clayton Kershaw is going to make a minor league rehabilitation start. And it's very interesting. I saw him throw out in the outfield on Sunday. He had a bullpen session. Dave Roberts was out there watching him. And Tim, I'm sure you heard around the edges as I did in mid-August that there was real concern about whether or not Kershaw was going to contribute anything for the Dodgers going forward. For his injury was just too much for him to come back this year. Well, after Dave saw him throw on Sunday, we asked him about that, and he said, you know, and he referenced that phrase, cautiously optimistic. He basically said, no, forget cautiously optimistic. I'm optimistic that he's going to help. But, man, they're going to have a lot of choices with how to use their staff, you know, if, as Dave Roberts expects, Clayton Kershaw is going to come back.
Well, it's a great, obviously, it's the greatest cliche ever. It's a great problem to have. I mean, Julio Urias is 16-3, and he's got to be in that rotation somewhere. But look at the other firepower they have with Kershaw and Buehler and Scherzer and Urias. I mean, that is an embarrassment of riches on the highest level. So, I mean, Buster, I looked at their pitching the other day going into Sunday. They had a 0.207 batting average against for the Dodgers this year. The only team since 1900 to have a lower batting average against in a season was the 68 Indians. Wow. With Louis Tion, Steve Hargan, Steve McDowell, Sam McDowell. That was the year of the pitcher. That's how dominant that Dodgers pitching has been this year. They're going to have an ERA under 3. That just doesn't happen anymore. And that's why they are so dangerous, is they have so many weapons, especially out of that rotation. And if Kershaw is another weapon, and he's the Kershaw from last October, just tell me how you beat that team with those 4 starting pitchers.
Boy, there's no doubt. It'll be fascinating. I was going to tell you this real quick the other day, before that game on Sunday, I asked Dave about the importance of winning the National League West versus, you know, going through the wild card entrance. And he kind of looked at me blankly. And I realized that what was going on was that 4 weeks out from the end of the regular season, that hadn't even occurred to him. Like he is so much in the moment right now. Like, okay, we just got to win today. I'm not going to worry about the ramifications of being a wild card versus being a division winner. There's certainly going to be plenty of time to talk about with these two teams, which might be the best in baseball at this point.
Right. Buster, before I forget, listen, that crazy game yesterday, what's lost in that is just how really good the Rays are. Not just to come back from 7-1 down, but the way they play, the way they do it is just remarkable. So they had, going into yesterday, they were leading the league in runs scored and hitting 240 as a team. So the only team that's hit lower than that during a full season and led their league in runs scored was the 68 Tigers, again, during the year of the pitcher. So here the Rays have this 240 batting average, but when it comes time to get a big hit, they always seem to get one. And they lead the league in runs scored, and they lead the league in batter strikeouts. So they're leading the league in strikeouts, but they're leading the league in runs scored. Only five teams have ever done both of those in one season, the last being the Reds in 2005. So it's like Alex Cora said, they put the ball in play better than anyone, and yet they strike out more than anyone, which means they recognize now's the time to put a ball in play. Now's the time to advance a runner, and they're capable of doing that. The rest of the time, they're hitting the ball out of the ballpark. They're striking out like everyone else. It's just another reminder how well the Rays play the game. And even though that was a crazy game yesterday, they did some beautiful things in that game in order to win it.
Before we move on from the Dodgers, I want to ask you about Cody Bellinger. Tim, I'm shocked at how bad he is. You know, the numbers reflect that his struggles against any kind of high velocity, opposing pitchers are just coming at him, you know, 95 mile an hour plus. He's struggling. He clearly someone who's struggling to understand his swing right now.
Yeah, and I'm still confused, and I haven't talked to Cody Bellinger about this. He wins the MVP in 2019, has a spectacular season, and comes in the next year. Granted, it was a COVID year, it was weird, but he said, I've revamped my swing because I know I can get better. And that revamped swing not only didn't work, it has really dragged him down. He's not going to play against left-handed pitching down the stretch and in the postseason if he doesn't watch it. If he doesn't get his bat speed back, and I refuse to believe anyone can lose your bat speed at such a young age unless you've made a mechanical adjustment, which just isn't working. And that's exactly what's happened here. I am astonished that a player as good as him can struggle like he has this year. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and we will know next year, too, how much of an impact that shoulder surgery that he had last offseason, you know, has had on him. And before you go, we get the news yesterday. Charlie Morton signs a one-year deal for $20 million for the Braves in 2022. I get the feeling Charlie Morton and the Braves moving forward is going to be a lot like Adam Wainwright and the Cardinals, where, you know, they head into free agency potentially, or they have the opportunity to go to free agency. But you know what? They'll just work out a deal year to year. What do you think?
Right. And look, no one should retire with the stuff that Charlie Morton has. That's just not fair for him to say, I'm really good still, so I'm going to retire. So he looks at his stuff and says, I can pitch another year. And the Braves say, please pitch for us. That guy's stuff is still so good. He has so many other interests in life, as you know, Buster. He's a fascinating guy. He's the absolute all-time barbecue king. He makes his own furniture. He sings. He plays the guitar. He loves his kids. He's got a million things to do. But he looks around and goes, I can make $20 million playing baseball, and I'm really good at it still. So good for him and good for the Braves for locking up. And I'm sure he's hoping that the DH comes in the National League next year, because I'm not sure I've ever met a pitcher who hates to hit more than Charlie Morton. He's not good at it, but he just hates doing it. I kind of love him for that.
Yep. The highest salary of his career with this new deal. And I'm sure you've heard this story before, but this says, as always to me, told you so much about who Charlie Morton is. He had a terrible year with the Pirates. He moved into free agency, and the Houston Astros moved quickly to sign him because they loved his pure stuff. They had some ideas about how he could use his fastball and his curveball, and they offered him a two-year deal. And A.J. Hinch tells a story about how when the Astros brass sat down with him for a dinner, Charlie looked at them and basically said, why would you offer me a two-year deal? Like, he thought the Astros were crazy giving him a multi-year deal. And then his agent told me a story about how as they were moving through this deal, like they, and I'm picking out the dates here, or just making up the days of the week, but like he agreed to the deal on a Monday, and on Wednesday, the deal wasn't done. And he called his agent and was like, hey, how come that, can you finish that deal? Because he was anxious that the Astros would suddenly realize, wait a second, Charlie Morton's not very good.
He's tremendous. And just to finish on the barbecue, he cooks on the barbecue better than anyone. He's got a hitch on the back of his car where he can take the barbecue with him. His own barbecue setup, he can take it with him. I said, have you ever taken it to the ballpark and cooked for the guys? He goes, no chance. I have to start cooking at 3 o'clock in the morning if I'm going to do it right. I'm not showing up at the Trop at 3 a.m. to cook for the guys.
Oh, he's one of the beauts in our game. All right, Tim, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster, see ya.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, we start with the same question for you that I asked Tim Kurkjian. Is Max Scherzer the front runner for the National League Cy Young Award?
I think he might be. You know, that was what I was going to get into with one of these numbers here. But I mean, what a vintage Max Scherzer performance. It is so much fun to see those happen. And that is, he was on all cylinders yesterday.
You know, it's interesting. When I was around the Dodgers over the weekend, I asked Dave Roberts on Sunday about the impact of Trey Turner. And he talked about how Turner, which it sounds funny because the Dodgers are a team of so much accomplishment. You know, we know, you know, what a great competitor Justin Turner is, Mookie Betts, Clayton Kershaw. And he talked about the edge that Trey Turner brings. And Max Scherzer does the same, I think, on the pitching side. So these guys, you know, phenomenal injection for this team as we come down the stretch. It'll be interesting to see if they can actually overtake the Giants. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So number three is 27. So speaking of Scherzer, yesterday was his 27th career game with at least 10 strikeouts and no walks. And I've talked about this before. We see a lot of 10 strikeout games, but when you're able to do that and also not walk anybody, to me, that is among the elite performances. And his 27th game with at least 10 strikeouts and no walks tied Curt Schilling for the second most we have ever seen in MLB history. The only pitcher with more is Randy Johnson with 36. And Max has been climbing this list, obviously, his entire career, but it's incredible to see him still doing these things. And it was his 20th career game with at least 25 swings and misses. And I love this because, again, that's another signature of dominance, right? Getting all of those whiffs. And that's seven more games with 25 swings and misses than anyone else in the pitch tracking era, which does conveniently begin when Scherzer's career began in 2008. And to the point about the Cy Young Award, I mean, his 2.28 ERA now leads the majors just ahead of Walker Buehler. And I mean, I just think it would be incredible to see. As we know, the only Cy Young winner to change teams was Rick Sutcliffe in 1984 when he won with the Cubs. And a fourth Cy Young for Max Scherzer would be in that Clemens, Randy Johnson, Steve Carlton, Greg Maddux territory, which I think he belongs in regardless of whether he wins it.
Number two.
Number two is 36. So I think that I've updated this Wander Franco list with you now for about 2 weeks. And I keep expecting, okay, by the time we talk next, it's going to be over. And it still isn't. So he's now reached base in 36 consecutive games, which is tied with 1951-52 Mickey Mantle for the second longest streak by any player age 20 or younger. The next streak where he's going towards is Frank Robinson in 1956. He reached base in 43 consecutive games. And of course, you know, maybe it's time to look beyond age. So just to set our, you know, standards where they should be, the overall record is almost twice that Frank Robinson record. So it's 1949 Ted Williams in 84 consecutive games. Not to say that Wander can't get there. He can't get there this year, but maybe he could get there by sometime next season, but still a ways to go. But he had a four-hit game yesterday. He was the youngest player with a four-hit game since Juan Soto in 2018 when he was 19 years old. And that's the company that he's finding himself in already in terms of really, really great hitters.
Number one.
Number one is 40. So the quite the first inning for the Blue Jays yesterday. It felt like all of those 1 o'clock games got off to a really fast start. Wander Franco extended his streak, and then Marcus Semien and Vlad Jr. went deep for the Blue Jays. So that was Vlad's 40th home run of the season in his 135th game of the season. So the only players aged 22 and younger with more homers in their first 135 games of a season were Eddie Matthews in 1953, Joe DiMaggio in 1937, and Johnny Bench in 1970. So if you're only trailing those guys, you're on a really great list. And of course, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. also had some 40 homer seasons, so they are now the second father-son combo to each hit 40 homers in a season, along with Cecil and Prince Fielder.
Speaking of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., speaking of the Blue Jays, I think they got a real shot, Sarah. I know, as I said to Tim, they're three games behind the Red Sox for the second wild card, three and a half games behind the Yankees for the first wild card. But they, to me, are the team that no American League club wants to see right now. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this offense has been carrying them all year. Ryu looked great yesterday, and he's been good for them throughout the season. And I just think it's really hard to count out a team with an offense as electric as that. I mean, I think that that can really help them down the stretch, especially facing some of the worst teams. I mean, you can kind of just bludgeon them and you can win those games regardless of what your bullpen is doing. So especially with how the Red Sox have looked lately, I know some of that is due to some of the guys who are out with COVID, but I mean, in that game yesterday, I assume you talked about that with Tim. That was quite the crazy game and not a game that the Red Sox should be losing. And they continue to lose games like that. The Yankees haven't looked as good as they did 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't see why the Blue Jays can't sneak in. And I really want to see Vlad Jr. in the playoffs again.
Now, Tim didn't endorse this as strongly as I thought he might. When I said to him about, I thought the most, you know, the news that developed over the last 72 hours, the most underreported was the injury to Loaisiga. To me, because when you look at the roster and his importance to that bullpen with Britton out, with Aroldis Chapman being something of a mess right now, that's a big blow for this team. What do you think?
I completely agree with you. I mean, he's been so good for them. It's so interesting to see, you know, the way that his Yankees career has gone. I mean, initially with getting a couple spot starts here and there and almost opener and whatever else, and he has found his role in that bullpen this season. He's been really good for them. And he was the pitcher who, when Aroldis Chapman was struggling, all the Yankees fans wanted him to be the closer. And even if maybe that wasn't the exact role for him, I think that does tell you just how important he's been there. So I completely agree. When I saw that, I started to doubt the Yankees again. It's amazing, just even if you think of the roller coaster of, oh, the Yankees are in the playoffs, no question. Oh, no, they're not going to make it, back and forth. It feels like even since that great run they had in July, it's been all up and down yet again. And that definitely felt like a down point.
I mentioned to Tim that I talked to Alex Rodriguez and Matt Vasgersian before the game on Sunday. And I said, look, to me, if you were to rank the importance of the players on the Yankees roster, Gerrit Cole would be number one. Number two would be Aaron Judge. And for me, Loaisiga was number three because of the importance he had in that bullpen. You know, you could make the case that, you know, Stanton in terms of his importance, Gary Sanchez, obviously resurgent as a catcher. But Loaisiga, just such a pivotal role in that group.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've seen that a lot of this, you know, these bullpen machinations are probably going to determine some of these postseason races. I mean, we were talking about the Blue Jays a minute ago. If they don't make it, is going to be largely due to the fact that they did not have as good of a bullpen as they should have throughout the year. And Loaisiga has definitely been. I mean, it's so funny the way we look at bullpens these days. So it's not always about the closer. It's about that guy, someone like Loaisiga, who's pitching in the eighth inning for you and able to really keep you in whatever game it might be. So I definitely think he's been, you know, sort of a secret weapon for them, because I don't think that that importance was as on display until they were playing better lately. But I think that's a huge loss.
All right, Sarah. Well, good to talk with you. I will talk to you on Thursday.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew. Andrew writes in, "Hey, Buster, sometimes there's a narrative that this is a weaker generation of catchers, but overall, when you look at Salvi and Gary's power, Buster's bat and glove, Yadi's bat and glove, and JT Realmuto's everything, do you think this era of backstops is underrated?"
Well, it's certainly better in 2021 than we expected. I would co-sign your feelings generally. I would say that we're seeing teams go with tandem catchers more, kind of like in the NFL. They're sharing the workload with running backs. But Salvador Perez having a great year. Buster Posey, a resurgence after basically 2 years off. That has improved the quality of play for catchers around the big leagues.
Dylan Lundberg is up next. Dylan writes in, "Why do managers still wear uniforms? I'm guessing it started with player managers, but when is the last time that happened?" It is kind of funny to see that in a dugout still in 2021.
Well, that goes under the category of that's the way it's always been. And I got to tell you, like, if all of a sudden, and the one manager who wore street clothes that the most notable in baseball history, Connie Mack, longtime manager of the Athletics, but he also was the owner. I got to say that if all of a sudden today they announced that managers are going to wear street clothes, it would be jarring to me. Like, to see Aaron Boone like in a suit in the Yankees dugout, that would seem weird too. Like, yeah. I think managers look better in pullovers. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a suit in the dugout would be a little aggressive. I think like a sweatsuit. Or, you know, maybe some faded
like khaki. Like soccer coaches have.
Right, exactly. Like, you could be a little, you got to be casual about it. You cannot go in all in on the suit like an NBA coach. Let's go to Ja Tai Joe. Our guy Ja Tai Joe writes in, "Will whoever comes in fourth in the AL East, whether it's Toronto, the Yankees, or Boston, go down in history as the best fourth place team in history? Are we looking at epic four team battles in the division in the coming years?"
You know what? In the divisional era, I think you're right. You know, without having gone through it year by year. But whichever team in this group does not make the playoffs, you talk about a winter of regret, especially if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox, with where they stand now, with everything around the trade deadline, whoever doesn't make the postseason is going to have a long winter and a long winter of criticism from the local media.
Next up, Brian Stone King at Brian Stone King, School of Sweat in Our Hearts. Brian writes in, "Please explain why the Dodgers keep playing Bellinger. They're supposed to have so much depth and be all about analytics. Dude is hitting 167. As I thumb this out, they're fighting for the division title. He's not worth a lineup spot at this point."
Yeah, Brian, I asked Dave Roberts the other day in the Dodgers dugout in San Francisco what Cody's reaction was when he talked to him about sitting down against left-handed pitchers. And Dave kind of said, like, Cody gets it. Like, that's how bad he's been, where Cody, even a guy who's won the MVP award, he understands how much he's struggling. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Cody Bellinger against fastballs 95 plus this year, he's hitting under 100. Like, his bat, his swing has slowed down. He has struggled to fix that. I would not at all be surprised if moving forward, not only is he not going to play against lefties, but I think there are going to be some situations where they're going to pinch hit for him if the other team has a left-hander on the mound.
Last one for today, Schultz Baseball at Ben Schultz. 1-2, Buster, seems to me teams use their closers in a tied game on the road frequently now. Is there any analytical reason for that? He points out that the Dodgers did this on Thursday night, and he says thank you in advance.
Yeah, I think because once you get, for example, if it's a tie game in the bottom of the ninth inning, I think teams are like, you know what, let's just survive another half inning. This is the highest leverage moment in this game potentially, and we should use our best reliever in this situation. But you're right, for years and years and years, managers always save their closer slash often their best reliever for when they got a lead. I think teams now, especially with the rule about putting runners at second base in extra innings, they just want to get through and survive the four extra innings.
That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.